Welcome to the Animal Control Report with your hosts,
Ashley Bishop
and Daniel Ettinger.
I thought for a second you forgot your name.
I forgot a lot of things. And in fact, I forgot one of the most important things, that we are part of the Keep It Humane Podcast Network, something that we haven't really been talking about. So the Keep It Humane Podcast Network is a group of other animal welfare related podcasts. So you can check that out at keepithumane.com/podcast network. So tune in to see those other great podcasts there. We have Don't F Up the Crime Scene. We have Community Cats, and we have Dr. G's podcast. Why am I drawing a blank, Bishop? It is the Animal Welfare Junction.
Yep.
Sorry, Dr. G. She just had an amazing episode with one of our previous guests, Daphna Nachmanovich, with the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. And they talked, it was basically all no-kill. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that. Have you, Bishop?
No, not yet, but I'm going to.
Mm-hmm. You might not want to miss it. Daphna does not hold back. PETA has always been a strong proponent of opposing that language and the idea. And Daphna really gets into the weeds on it. It's pretty epic. Don't forget to check out our website, keepithumane.com. Also, thank you for all the submissions. Bishop doesn't know what's coming yet, but we have several submissions for ACO of the year and agency of the year. So we'll get that worked through here in the next couple weeks and get back to you with the winner.
Woo-hoo!
So thank you all that participated in that. I want to thank everybody listening and following on Spotify. Did you know you can follow the podcast on Spotify? I didn't know that until I looked recently at our Spotify settings.
You can follow, and it actually helps us if, instead of streaming, if you download the episode.
Yeah, so do that, please. And don't forget to rate, like, and share the podcast. Also, check us out on all of our socials, the Animal Control Report or Keep It Humane. We're everywhere. Bishop, I got a story to tell.
Oh, no.
I got hit by a dog, bro.
I need to hear this one.
I literally got hit by a dog. That is correct, folks. I didn't get hit by a car or a bicycle or a motorcycle or an ambulance. I got hit by a standard poodle.
Okay.
So I'm running, and the standard poodle...
Not for work, for fun.
No, this is, just outside. And it's like twilight, or whatever that is, right before dark. And...
horrible movie.
I've never seen it. So this dog has the zoomies, and I can hear the owner, like, I forget its name. It was like Zenshu or Minutia or it was something like that. And I'm like, okay. And they keep calling it. And he's like, zoom, 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 zoom. I'm a poodle. Zoom, 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 zoom. I make labradoodles. Zoom, 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 zoom. And golden doodles. Zoom, zoom, zoom. I'm like, this dude is out of his mind. But he wasn't aggressive at all. He was just stupid and happy and honestly just enjoying life. Well, I don't know if he thought that I was prey. I don't know what he thought. But homeboy came full speed to the outside of my knee, and either with his head or his shoulder or something, and literally knocked my ass out. I was on the ground. This is not funny. No, you should laugh because it's funny, but like, I literally went to the ER, bro.
Oh, no. Of all things in your career, dude.
I know. And like, here's the thing is... I get hit, I am wailing in pain. Like, I haven't been in this much pain in a long time. And I'm like, oh, it hurts so bad. You know, like that kind of stuff. And the owner of Zenshu or Minutia, whatever the dog's name was, I forget, came over and was like, are you okay? And I'm like, I'm not okay. I can't walk. I thought for a second it was like completely like compounded and the bottom part of my leg was going the opposite way. It hurt so bad. And they literally just left my ass there in the field and bounced with their dog. So F you, Minshew's owner.
Wow.
For not helping me hobble home. I literally was on the ground in the field for 10 minutes. It felt like longer. It was like 5 to 10 minutes before I could even try to stand up.
Do you not run with a phone?
Who am I going to call?
I don't know. There's a special number. It's only 3 digits.
I'm not calling that for that. I could hobble home. It's fine. And then I drove to urgent care and they were like, sorry, we don't have an x-ray technician on. I don't know. They don't sound like that. But if they did, I apologize. They were like, we don't have an x-ray technician on. And I was like, damn, I don't want to wait because like I like to run. But apparently it didn't matter because there's no break. And then the swelling was nasty, pretty big. Like my knee, my normal knee is the size of like a softball. My swollen knee was like a soccer ball. And I don't think I'm exaggerating. Like I couldn't even put pants on. I've been naked all weekend. Just kidding. That's a joke, people. But the actually getting hit by a dog is not a joke. So put your dogs on a leash, people. How about that? How you like them apples?
Yeah. Yeah. Put your dog on a leash. And did you figure out, do you have, you said it's not broken, but is it sprained? Is it torn meniscus? Like,
well, so the swelling was so much that they couldn't do anything as far as that. They did test them. I went to my doctor the next day and they did test like, strength and mobility and whatever that is called. And then he was like, hey, if it's still like this in 2 weeks, we'll get you into an MRI. And then again, you'll probably just do like, if it is torn, you'll probably do like just what's that stuff called? Physical therapy. I'm like, time out. Like a player on the Steelers got injured and homeboy went to the hospital and had surgery like the same minute. Why can't I have that?
Well, partially because you went to a regular doctor and you didn't go to somebody for, I'm not advocating this particular one, but bone and joint. So you should think about going to an orthopedic.
I have to get a referral though.
That's seriously?
Crazy. Yeah, California is different.
Like, I mean, we have to get referrals for things here too, but we literally have a clinic called Bone and Joint and they have a walk-in.
Bone and Joint sounds like a nightclub.
In regards, I don't know what kind of clubs you are going to.
Well, in regards to all of this, thankfully I have insurance, and that's going to kind of segue into our guest today because we have a cool guest on to talk about pet insurance, I believe.
I wonder, does the pet insurance cover if the dog gives injuries to other people like this other than bites?
We're about to find out, so let's welcome our guest, Debbie Turner, and she is with Dean. Say it again for me, Deborah.
Dean Insurance Agency.
Thank you. And the website we'll go to is dogbitequote.com. Again, that's dogbitequote.com, where you can learn more about it. So, Deborah, you heard my story.
Yes.
You heard Bishop's question.
Yes.
Insurance wouldn't cover something like that, right?
Wrong. Anymore, if that dog had scared you instead of hit you, which is not as much contact in that, and you had turned to run for your life and you fell and broke your foot, then that would be covered under canine liability as well. Wow. So it's not about bites anymore. It's about scratches. It's about dogs hitting you. It's about...
How crazy did I, like, I didn't set this up on purpose, Debbie. Like, I literally got hit by a dog probably running 55 miles an hour exactly when I planted my leg. And, like, I have this bruise. It is bad. It's bad.
You got it. And not to top it off, Dan, it was a hit and run because I'm sure the dog didn't stop.
The dog kept doing the zoomies.
Oh. Well, let me tell you that that claim is probably worth anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000.
Well, how do I find them?
Well, that I'll leave to you. You should have gotten their information before they left the scene.
Bro, they left me in peril. Like I was literally like punching the ground. It hurt so bad, you know?
Well, maybe return to the scene of the crime and see if they show back up eventually.
When I see that standard poodle named Minshew.
To be fair, Dan, they also, if you were punching the ground, they probably figured, oh shit, he's gonna get up and whoop my butt.
How? With one leg? There's no way. I wasn't really punching the ground, but you know how when you're in so much pain, they're like, ah, this hurts so bad. Like, that's how I sounded. And so I probably sounded weird, but I am, now that you said that, I'm suing them if I can find them. So look out, standard poodle owner named whatever. I'm coming for you because you broke my running ability and I'm mad.
Well, here's the downside. A lot a lot of homeowners and renters policies no longer cover canine related injuries. They've taken the coverage out of many of those policies. So if you can find them, and if they have even have a homeowners or renters policy, and if the policy provides that coverage, then literally it would be I'm guessing it could go over $50,000. I've heard of much less injuries going for much more money.
Wow. I wonder if that's why they left. Seriously. They
no thought doubt. That, yeah. No doubt.
Yeah. And I think they were driving a Tesla. So just saying, I'd like one of those. So Deborah, tell us a little bit about just the whole concept of insurance for your dog. And let's just kind of talk through, how did you, first off, like, what is your background and how did you get into doing that specifically? Because it seems like such a unique type of thing.
Well, there are only four of us in the country that sell this particular type of insurance. And way back, I adopted a personality challenge miniature schnauzer. So, you're laughing.
I love that.
We tried to fix him. We took him to a doggy shrink at $150 an hour.
Wow.
And we concluded it was his mother, but what are you going to do at that point? I got to reading everything I could find, like literally 40 to 50 books on canines, canine behavior, canine health, and how it related to behavior. And I have a degree in insurance from Florida State University, who won yesterday. Yay. I had to do, our senior project was to develop a new insurance concept or program. So I had already done that in school, and I started researching and was about to write a paper for the CPCU Society, Certified Property and Casualty Underwriter, which is the premier designation in our industry.
Does the company, so you're saying you can't buy it to insure an event that already happened.
That's always the case. You can't buy life insurance on a dead person either.
Why? No, I'm kidding. So thinking to dangerous animals, like my dangerous animal ordinance requires that if I've declared an animal dangerous, that they have to have a $250,000 insurance policy. Is that still insurable?
I actually underwrite dangerous dogs, vicious dogs all day long. But I will tell you that I don't consider that designation is indicative of the dogs likely to bite again. And the reason is that the definition of dangerous ranges from a dog that bit a wild deer in his backyard. The dog was labeled dangerous. 6-month-old golden retriever was labeled dangerous for life because he scratched a child when the dog was 6 months old. And a lot of the definitions of dangerous dog has no consistent meaning. So I look at each individual situation because dogs can be put in situations where they become animals and they are either protecting themselves or they're protecting their owner.
Or the owner's an idiot and wasn't watching the dog.
Well, if you have insurance, even if you're an idiot, that's still going to pay if your dog injures somebody. We do not have an idiot exclusion, unfortunately.
You probably lose a lot of people.
Yeah. I need to say how many, but yeah.
Well, that's really good to know because I know that's one of the hardest parts of our ordinance is people getting the insurance. And most people just have an umbrella policy with their homeowner, so that's interesting to hear that a lot of them are not covering
right
that anymore.
It used to be that an umbrella would drop down and cover those liability exposures that you did not have a separate policy for. But then about 10 years ago, they changed it so it's called following form, and it follows whatever your primary policies are. So if you have a boat, a car, a motorcycle, you have to show those exposures and provide insurance information on those individual policies in order for that to cause the coverage to be enforced or to pay. But more and more, they're taking the canine, they're not just taking out canine liability. Let me back up. They're taking out animal liability. So that means if your parrot pecks my eye or your cat scratches me and I get cat scratch fever, that's not going to be covered under the homeowners and renters many of the time. Not most, but a lot of the incidents aren't covered by homeowners.
Interesting.
And when I started doing this in 2012, the average industry claim was $7,500. And that was 2012. So here are we 11 years later. It's now $52,000.
Man, I could have got a new car or a scooter.
You still can. Statute of limitations run usually, and I'm not an attorney, but usually about 2 years. So
I live right across the street from where it happened. So if I do see that dog, I'm going to have a conversation. I think more so if they would have just helped me up and helped me get home or say, hey, is there anybody we can call? Like the fact that they just left me hanging was, that was just rough. No pun intended.
And the fact that they were not supervising their dog close enough.
True. And they had no control over it. So I just remember like they kept calling it. And he was like, this is great. You know, this is the best place ever. So what is one of the largest claims that you've ever had to pay out? I'm just curious. Like, I don't know if you can go into the details or not of the case, but like, is it a bite? Is it something else that occurred?
Actually I've had two very large claims. We paid both of them. One was in people having, and I have the same issue. We have everybody call us before they come because one of my 10 pound dogs might, we had a claim where a guy got thrown into the pool because he was backing up from being attacked. And I guess was injured because we paid on that. But the worst claim I've ever had was a workman who went into the fence. Now I'm under the impression that the dogs were barking and snarling at the gate. I may be wrong on that, but the owner didn't know the dogs were outside and that the gentleman was coming into his, into their yard. And it was two, and I hate to say pit mixes, but that's what they were. And they mauled the guy almost to death. I mean, very, very, they said he'll need lifetime care. And then the second largest one I ever had was a dog that bit a professional. Somebody that uses their hands, and they're now up to 7 surgeries. And in cases like that, we don't necessarily fight. And in one of the cases, it turned out that the dog had previously been labeled dangerous, but they lied on the application. And lying on any kind of application, just not telling them that you have a Rottweiler or that you have any kind of dog is reason to void a policy.
Okay.
Even though this guy had not told us everything, they did go ahead and pay that claim, which is very unusual. That's what they did.
Do you ever see the need or interest in expanding from dogs to include cats?
Funny, I got that call last week, but I will be honest with you. All I know about cats is that they're not dogs.
Okay.
So I don't have the underwriting expertise that I developed over years of studying dogs and dog behavior that I do with any other animal. So
I only ask because I've actually declared two cats in my career dangerous. So
all cats technically are dangerous.
Daniel, all dogs are dangerous too, then.
I know, but cats are just cats. I love cats, and I miss having a cat, but I like to make fun of
they're
them.
They're evil. It's okay.
They're great.
I just... You had mentioned, like, cat scratch fever, which is a legitimate and big concern.
So there are two other agencies in the country that will write cats or birds or... whatever animal it is. The only breed I do not underwrite or will not write is a wolf hybrid. Mm. The USDA actually labeled wolf hybrids as domestic dogs, but I'm going to go with the scientific theory that wolf hybrids are not in fact domestic animals.
I guess I wasn't aware that they were labeled that because they're not allowed in my state.
Well, the USDA thinks they're dogs, so.
Huh.
I think they're cool, but I understand why they wouldn't want to
insure them.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it. Let's talk about this. So, I work for a municipality, whether it's the sheriff's office, police department, public health, public safety, or I work for a nonprofit doing animal services, right?
Correct.
And during the course of my duties, I get injured by a dog. Can I still, outside of my employer, sue the owner civilly? And yes. Has that ever happened?
Yes. No, you have the right to sue me because my video didn't work this morning.
Oh, snap. Okay, cool. We could settle though. We could settle. Daniel. Are you going to be at the Florida conference in March? You can buy me dinner. There you go.
All right. That works. darn, I lost where I was going.
Oh yeah. Just so if I'm injured on the duty. If I'm injured on duty, right. Mm-hmm. By someone's animal in the course of my, like a course of my duties, whether I'm bitten or run into, whatever it may be. I do have the ability to sue them. Yeah. Like it would be.
Yeah, you're an individual at the end of the day. You may work for a municipality or some other agency, but at the end of the day, you're an individual. Now, your medical bills are typically going to be covered or should be covered by workers' compensation.
Yeah.
But I don't know of anything that would stop you from suing. Veterinarians are now, and this just blows me away how they can do this, but I've had several veterinarians that have sued dog owners because the dogs bit them.
Oh, wow.
They're like, okay. What? How can that even happen? Doggy daycare places. I've had a couple of suits where in one case, the little untrained employee backed a dog into a corner. So he leashed him, and they had told him that if you couldn't control a dog to get on all fours and sneak up to it. And what? Yeah, the sneaking ended. The guy's face got in the dog's face and the dog bit the kid's face and the kid then sued the dog's owner.
Wow.
So the plaintiff's attorneys will take just about any kind of dog related case because they get typically somewhere between, I don't know, 30, 40, 50% of whatever the settlement is. So a $50,000 settlement ends up being $20,000 in their pocket. So they're pretty anxious to help people who have been bitten by a dog, even if that person, provoked the dog. And it varies by states. Some states are what we call strict liability. So that means that you have absolutely no defense whatsoever, period. If your dog injures my dog in a strict liability state, it doesn't matter. You're still responsible for my vet bills. Now, here's the one I'll ask you. time and again, I have people walking large dogs, large breed dogs of any breed, and the little dogs will, the owners will open the door and the little dog comes flying into the face of the big dog. Big dog then protects himself and his owner, and the little dog loses big time. The big dogs, even though they're on a leash and under control by their owner, are being labeled dangerous.
not here. Not so here.
Here's the thing, though. If you don't have affirmative defenses to a dog attack that results in death, it may be considered a dangerous dog, and our listeners may have differing answers throughout the country because it's going to be written differently. I've seen it. I've been on cases where that exact thing happens. The dog that kills the dog is on leash. The dog that was off leash, you know, is the instigator, but there's no affirmative defense to say that this dog, these actions are provoked, or however you want to determine it. And so what had happened was that dog was labeled dangerous. I can't recall if it actually, if the case voted in the favor of dangerous, but the officer also charged the dead dog's owner a dog running at large ticket as well. So,
yeah, that doesn't often happen. The little dog owners go after the big dog owners big time. And I just don't understand our legal system. I don't understand animal controls thinking in that, but nevertheless, it is what it is.
Bishop, yeah. What's your take? Because you seem frustrated by that, so let me hear it.
With my discretion, I would absolutely not be declaring that big dog dangerous, because the provocation was that the little dog was off leash and approached big dog.
Are you the court?
Sure.
Seriously, like what does your, and we can look up your ordinance right now, but like, what does the ordinance say? Because if there is no provocation, you have to, in my opinion, and I've changed over the years, you have to allow for due process. Now, granted, there is a level of discretion, the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law, all that stuff. And I respect that. And we don't want to bog our courts down with cases that are, you know, not necessary. But at the end of the day, it's like, if the probable cause is there, do we not then just allow for the courts to make that decision?
Mine doesn't go to court.
Oh, you do a declaration?
Mine's a declaration, and then if the owners want to appeal it, they can appeal it to our public health and safety. There is no court. It is what I say.
Wow, you have all the power.
I mean, okay, what I and my the chief and or his designee, which is my supervisor, but my supervisor defers to me and goes, I don't know about animals. What do you think we should do?
Here in Orange County, Florida, I'm actually on the board that determines whether or not a dog is dangerous or not. And they bring both parties in, and some of the bites are, well, I don't have to tell you guys, the bites can just be horrendous. Mm-hmm. And so far, I've only been in three, but in every case, animal control nailed it. Those dogs were dangerous. Mm-hmm. Or maybe the dogs weren't dangerous, but the owners were, I hate to say idiots. Mm-hmm. Their owners refused to follow the law in any way, shape, or form. And so they would let the dogs off leash. These policies are very uniquely written, each one of them. So in a couple of them, if a dog is in an area that requires a leash and the leash or the collar break, they do not provide coverage. So it's important to ask what the policies you're buying do cover. Off-premises coverage is another biggie. If you don't have off-premises coverage in the policy, then if your dog leaves your yard and he's front feeder in your neighbor's yard, and he's back feeder in your yard, it could be that that claim would be denied if there's not off-premises coverage. So you want to make sure that that's always in the policy.
Well, and I've actually prior to this episode, I have a bully breed, and he's an 80-pound meat missile is what I refer to him as.
Hopefully he doesn't run into anybody like me.
Oh my God. No, he actually full body slams people. But I had actually looked into the insurance myself, and I actually had a quote sitting out there, and I messed around with it a little bit because I was curious, you know, does the breed have anything to do with the premiums and things like that?
Are you asking me? It depends on the program. Like I said, there's four nationwide, and in mine, when you give me a breed and you can't pick mix because that's too general, you've got to give me a primary breed on that dog. And typically anymore, we just defer to the veterinarian.
Sure.
But, and it's important because, are you familiar with the university study out of the University of Florida?
No.
They sent out thousands of emails to people like yourselves, groomers, veterinarians, breeders, people who had taken courses on pet health insurance, which included me. So they just went wide scope. And at the end of the day, you would get a picture and there'd be three primary breeds and you'd select the primary breed.
I want to do that.
The professionals got 27% correct.
Yeah.
So that's why I can't just go with it's a dog. That's not enough information. But it's weight based. Now, if you have one of the breeds that are known to be a little more aggressive, and I'm going to throw in Chihuahuas here, and you'll probably get backlash that Chihuahuas are
No, they're the piranhas.
Yeah, everybody listening to the show is nodding their head in agreement. So you're good, Debbie. Exactly what we were going to say there.
Or dachshunds.
Yeah, so that dog, if the average breed is around, say, 15 pounds, I notch it up to what I call the next tier, which is the base premium. And the base premiums are in the 100 to, I think it's 250. What happens is, as you go through the questions, for example, if you leash walk versus having a fence, you're going to pay a little more. If you have young kids in the household, you're going to pay a little more. And the reason for that is that young kids will A, open the door, B, invite their friends over who then jump on the dog, or don't treat the dog properly. So that's increased exposure. So each of those questions, if you'll go through and look, there's only 12, each of them have some basis in what increases or decreases the exposure.
Yeah. And it's a very easy, and you know, you get the answers right away. You know, I'm actually sitting here looking at my quote right now. So it's really simple to do, and that's awesome. And I honestly, I didn't think it was even that bad for a $50,000 coverage for my meat missile is, you know, $460 a year of not needing to worry. So the breed doesn't make much of a difference at all. So if we,
Animal.
Let's say we put one breed on and I want to actually do a DNA test with him, and all of a sudden it comes back and holy cow, he's, you know, mostly Labrador. Does that change if I contact you and be like, hey, we actually did this DNA test?
No, because that's a totally unregulated industry and they could tell you your dog's a rabbit and I mean, suppose you could get a refund, but I just don't think, and because dogs are even more mixed than we are as humans, I just don't think they've reached that point of saturation that they can actually tell which dog is which. It was 8-10 years ago, which I know things have changed a lot in 8 or 10 years, but they had sent a purebred dog to all of the testing companies at that time, and they didn't even all come back with the purebred's breed. So that's why, and frankly, I think it's a two-edged sword, because maybe you'll get lucky and it'll come back that it's a Labrador, but it could also come back that your dog is Caucasian or Presnicario, and those are really big dogs. So they go to like the top of the rating scale just because of their weight and no other reason. And sure. I don't know that I'd want to have to admit that I have certain breeds of dogs.
You mentioned early in the show about policies at some point being like $500 a year.
Mm-hmm. Right? That's the average.
That's still the average.
Yeah. So I had two golden retrievers. I was talking to an owner this morning and he had two golden retrievers and it was $200 per golden retriever. And so it varies a lot. My little darlings here would not be even $200 a year. But you get very large dogs, and everything else aside, just their ability to bite with the power behind that bite varies. And, you know, there's so many weird rumors out there about pits grinding their teeth and locking their jaw. Yeah. Well, they aren't anatomically capable of doing that. They will bite and hold. And we had one situation where the dog, it was a golden retriever, bit and held. So what the family did was pull the dog off the child. Well, if they had just managed to get the dog to release, you would have had maybe 4 puncture wounds. But as a result, they had 4 rips and tears.
Yeah.
And this, the other idea that when dogs are fighting is you reach in and walk them backwards. You guys agree with that theory?
Well, I do teach, and some people don't feel that it is humane, but we try to keep it humane on this program.
Maine.
If it's literally the dogs are like not letting go, the dog is not letting go at all. I feel like any sort of action that may include physical, like hitting, pulling, is going to cause that instinct of shaking, right? So the dog's going to shake on whatever bite that it has just because that instinct of like shaking back and forth. And so what I've been taught over the years and what seems to be the best method is truly trying to get something around the neck of the dog to stop its airway or to impact its airway to breathe, because instinct again is going to take over and the dog is going to open its mouth to try to breathe. And so that's been the most common or most, what's the word I'm looking for, Bishop? Most
useful.
Yeah. What would you say, Bish?
I would agree, because I mean, ultimately, even if you're not going to get them to shake, you're still going to be causing a lot more damage by pulling them away. Correct. I know I've heard grabbing their back legs too.
Yeah.
Which I can see that working for the simple fact of them letting go to turn and look and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But if they're thrashing around, you're not going to be able to do that.
Agreed.
So I'm more of the opinion that in that situation, especially if there is a person involved, I don't really care what you have to do, because ultimately,
public safety.
That person's life is what's the most important in that moment. And you can deal with the repercussions later.
Yeah.
One of the big area of claims is dogs fighting and owners reaching in.
Oh, yeah.
And I understand that, but
you don't ever get in the middle of a dog fight.
Yeah, you do. There's lots of people. I can name them for you.
Well, you're not supposed to.
I'm not going to. But it's natural and it's human. I mean, my little 3 little dogs sometimes will act like siblings and get into a fight. And I just step in between them because the mouths are too small to even bite my leg.
Yeah.
But it is amazing the number of people that will reach into the middle. And from an underwriting standpoint, they get bitten, in my opinion, and I think half the time it's probably their own dog that bit them because they're such primal state.
So I'm glad you bring that up. And there's a class that I teach, shameless plug, Scratching the Surface of Bites. And in that class, we talk about the forensic approach to identifying dog bites, because often animal control officers will just say, oh yeah, that's a bite because the victim said that's what happened, instead of actually looking at the evidence. And then you can, like, if let's just say there's a dog fight and it's a larger dog, we'll just say a 50-pound dog versus a small 10-pound dog. You should be able to, with this training, identify is the bite from the 10-pound dog or the 50-pound dog, right?
Forensics.
Yep, forensics, exactly. And so that's what I teach in that class, but I think it's important that we actually do that versus just taking the word of the victim. And I know a lot of officers are busy, and I'm not trying to, like, dump on them, but the reality is, like, take our time, investigate the case, because what tends to happen, and I see this a lot in my role now, is we get a lot of public record requests or open records requests from attorneys that are taking these cases civilly, right? So then they're looking at the case trying to determine, okay, was this bite? And they may bring an expert in, like, and we had Dr. Ian Dunbar Bishop. We had the bite guy, Dr. Jim Crosby, recently became a doctor. So Dr. Jim Crosby, being in, it sounds like you know him, Deborah, but he's an expert when it comes to dog bites. So, like, bringing someone like him in, you know, like, to speak to, okay, which direction did this bite come from, right?
Right.
Does it match the size of the dog? Those type of things. So pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's not obvious if the bite's 3 inches across versus 1 inch across is how there could be a question as to what dog bit who.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just my layman's opinion and has no value.
No, it has value. And we really appreciate all this insight on the show. I as we set up for the show, I really wasn't sure what to expect. And the, you know, as we talked about offline, we really try to have just more of a casual conversation, but it's been super insightful. Bishop, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I definitely enjoyed this. And I hope that it will help the listeners. And now you know that there's four different agencies across the nation that can help if you end up having to declare a dog dangerous. That's honestly one of the biggest questions I get. Okay, you declared the dog dangerous. Well, where do I get the insurance? And will anybody insure me? So now you can actually say, yeah, you can. They can get the insurance, and here's how to go about that.
Deborah, just for everybody listening, it's dogbitequote.com, right? Dogbitequote.com.
Yeah, you need to put the www in there because all of the pet health insurers have been around for so much longer that if you just put dogbitequote.com, sometimes it'll come up with a health insurer.
Okay, so www.dogbitequote.com. Again, yes. www.dogbitequote.com.
That is
Quam.
Quam.
Let
it's
me
not
give,
Quam, it's Com.
Com, yeah. Let me give you a 10-second spiel on what my type of policy would cover. And this is very generalized, but it gives you an idea of how wide the coverage is. So if a dog were to bite, scratch, scare, trip, knock somebody over, run out in front of a car causing property damage, injure another domestic animal on or off the premises anywhere in the United States, we would pay the medical, defense, and settlement up to the policy limits, and we have no deductible.
And people may think, when hearing or thinking of dog insurance, that if their dog got sick and had to go to the hospital, it covers that, but it doesn't.
No, this policy is what's called third party. So nothing that happens to you, your family, or your dog is going to be covered under this policy. If whatever your family does, your dog does, to get the family sued, then that's where the coverage comes in.
Awesome.
Makes sense.
It's good to know. The more you know.
The more you know, yes.
Well, you're always welcome back on the show. If we ever get a case to talk through, maybe we can chat about that in real time.
That'd be great.
We do appreciate your just insight, knowledge, and this program that exists. I might need to get it because my dog likes to chase skateboards. He doesn't do anything to the people, but he bites the skateboard. And I'm like, dude, do not do that.
Well, yeah, because if he throws somebody off a skateboard, guess what?
I'm going to run just like that person. Well, I can't run.
But no, until he knocks over their knee and then all of a sudden
I'll be hobbling away. I'll take their skateboard and put my bad leg on that and then skate away. Well, this has been an outstanding episode. We really appreciate your time. We really appreciate your insight and look forward to hearing from you in the future.
Okay.
Bishop, you got anything else?
No, thank you for coming on and joining us today. I second everything Dan said. It's been awesome.
Cool.
Well,
if you ever do anything, just let me know.
You bet. Absolutely. You bet. We appreciate that. So, again, check out the website, www.dogbitequote.com. And thanks again for listening. Check out our website, keepithumane.com. And as always, we like to say,
keep it humane. Maine.